Welcome to the latest installment of the Sharp Angles Props and DFS Show. I am your host, Todd Burrows, and my regular partner, Ryan McChrystal, is out this week. Subbing with him again for the second time this year is Ray Summerlin. And Ray will cover some info on, he spoke with Ryan, he edited Ryan's article. So I am fully confident that Ray will be able to cover Ryan's props. And then we'll dive into some early DFS thoughts. Ray and I will go back and forth on that. Before we dive into today's episode, though, we want to remind you that you can get access to all our fantasy content, including insights, props, worksheets, and more, by taking advantage of our fantasy packages available on the Sharp Football website. Right now, we're running a special offer for listeners, code ANGLES, for 15% off any fantasy package. The 15% discount also extends to every package site-wide. Check it out in the podcast description or use the code ANGLES during checkout on the purchase page of the Sharp Football website and save 15%. Also, if you could please subscribe and give the thumbs up on both our YouTube channel and our podcast, wherever you listen to us on podcasts, it really does help us to continue to give you this wonderful content. And if you're listening and have questions on the props or the DFS content, please feel to jump in on the comments. We love to hear from you. As mentioned, Ryan is off this week, but Ray, you are here.
Yeah, my second time on the podcast today. I'm wearing the same shirt. I actually think, because I work from home, I normally keep like a meeting shirt on a chair next to me. Like, this is my, all right, I have a meeting, I need to have a collared shirt on. And I believe I might have worn this one on a video I did earlier this week. I think I forgot to change out my meeting shirt midweek. So there's going to be a lot of me in this shirt on the YouTube channel. So I guess
I'm sure all your female fans will be deeply disappointed that you did not give them a new look for this show, Ray.
I can't believe I was looking at myself in the camera and I went, oh yeah, I've worn this before. I'm going to have to, after this podcast, I'm going to take it off, put it in the hamper, and I will put a new meeting shirt on the back of the chair next to me. So I can be ready.
Next to world peace, the fact that you
it's
have
the most important thing.
Yeah. You know, the Israel Palestine thing I worry about right after that, you know, I'm going to slide in the shirt that you wear. Literally, you know, I've got like 14 blue shirts like this, so I literally could be wearing the same shirt every week.
I struggle to find clothes, given if you stare at me on the YouTube page, you probably figure that out. And clothes that I like. And so I do. When I find a shirt I like, I just go and buy like every different color of it. So every shirt I wear is just the same shirt in a different color. So I suppose I actually have this exact shirt as well a second time. That's the life I lead. I don't know why we're talking about this. Probably because my ADHD medication is worn off.
Probably because you brought it up.
Yeah, my ADHD medication's worn off this late at night. So it's going to be wild, kids. But let's get into it.
All right. I am looking forward to this. What is the over under on the number of shirts that you have, in this style, the number of colors? Oh, what is the
12.
Prop on that, Ray?
I think we're up to 12 now.
Oh, 12. Wow. That is a really good shirt. I'm one to talk because I literally go to the big and tall one pocket t-shirt. You know, back when I was a sales rep and I would go out in suit and tie and then later in just, you know, a nice shirt, you know, I had a collection of clothes with collars. And those days are past now. So I'm glad that everyone got to meet Ray and I in a much deeper way than we have ever thought to do in the past. And we'll move on to football, to our props. The first one is one that is very interesting. Deontay Johnson over the longest reception of 22 and a half yards.
Yeah, Ryan has been attacking this Cardinals defense with this prop all year long to very good success. And he has in the column you can find over at sharpfootballanalysis.com that Arizona allows a league-worst 61% completion rate on throw throws 15 or more yards downfield. And that kind of opens up both Johnson and Pickens for this prop. And so if you just wanted to play both of them, that probably isn't a bad idea. But just looking at the coverage and the amount of too high coverage the Cardinals play, that is a better scheme for Deontay Johnson, leads to more targets for Deontay Johnson. And so that's why he's put Deontay Johnson in the column, and that's why he's playing it. But I think you could make a similar argument for Pickens. And one thing I would add to it is that Kenny Pickett's deep ball rate for the season before last week was 9.3%. I believe that's off the top of my head. And then last week,
pretty good for off the top of your head.
But I do know, I wrote this one down actually. His deep ball rate was up to 12.1% last week. He threw over the middle on like 45% of his attempts last week. It was way down at 23, 24%. In the season prior to that. And so it seems like they made a concerted effort. It could have been the Bengals defense, but they made a concerted effort to get the ball in the middle of the field to Pat Freiermuth. We obviously saw his stat line, and they made an effort to throw the ball down the field more. And if you're throwing the ball down the field against the Cardinals, you are likely to find success. And so I think that's a big part of why we like this prop.
Yeah. And I guess my comment is, you mentioned George Pickens. If you hadn't, I would have. I would have guessed that Pickens would have been, you know, if Ryan was here, I would have asked him why Deontay instead of Pickens. And I'm sure he would have had a very good reason because he's Ryan. But I like, you know, and we'll get to this when we get to the DFS section. I'm a big fan of the Steelers this week. Let's go to the second prop, which is another over of the longest reception. And again, it's a guy that I will touch on a little bit in the DFS section, sort of. And that is DeAndre Hopkins. And right now we show it again at 22.5. And Will Levis has a cannon.
Yeah. And I think after that first game with Will Levis, with, you know, the four touchdowns, I'm pretty sure Ryan thought that we were going to be able to cash longest reception overs for the Tennessee Titans pass catchers. And it did work out a few times. We did it with Kyle Phillips 1 week, really hit for us. And so it has worked out a few times, but it hasn't worked out as much for DeAndre Hopkins. This is just 3-2, this prop with Will Levis, the over the longest reception. But I mean, I think it's something you keep going back to the well with, because over the long haul, it is going to hit more often than not. Levis leads the league in his rate of throwing 15 or more yards downfield. 32% of his attempts, 20% of his attempts have been 20 or more yards. Since Levis took over, DeAndre Hopkins has seen 12 targets at 20 or more yards downfield, which is 2.4 per game. That's the third most in the league over that span. And the other thing I would add to that is that the Colts, and we know this from DFS, the Colts tend to create a good fantasy environment for they have all year. And that could lead to, you know, they've hidden Will Levis a little bit. They've limited his passing attempts. He had one game where I think he had 18 passing attempts. And when that happens, it's going to be hard to hit any of these props. You need volume still to hit the longest reception prop, because the more opportunities you have at it, obviously, the more likely it is to hit. I think we could see more volume from the Titans passing game than we've seen recently, just because of the environment the Colts create in their games. And so that gives you a little bit more of a nudge here towards the over.
About that, hiding Will Levis. And something else you mentioned earlier points me to something which is my biggest takeaway from this season, which I will call the scourge of conservative coaching. You know, we went through a period where about 5-7 years ago, where a lot of the old-fashioned conservative coaches were weeded out of jobs. John Fox, Jeff Fisher. And I know I'm kind of going off on a tangent here, but it's something that is really becoming more and more annoying between the ticky-tack fouls every week. Every little, you know, you get a 50-yard reception in the last week of to Tank Dell, and there's some barely noticeable, you know,
bogus.
He didn't stop, you know, it's like a cop pulling you over because you not all four wheels didn't stop at the stoplight. And then you add in this scourge of conservative coaching, Ray, and it makes the games less fun. How are you ever going to let Will Levis? I mean, the Tennessee Titans are not winning a Super Bowl championship this year. Give Will Levis the ability to see what you actually have with this guy instead of, you know, you've got 8 to 10 to maybe as many as 15 coaches trying to win like it's 1985. And I've just had enough of it. And I've interrupted our show to go on a rant.
So I think that we have a quarterback problem right now in the league. And I think that that is very clear. And I wonder if I keep trying to figure out if the quarterback nature of some of these positions, we have a very good, or at least what you know, the draft people say is a very good quarterback class coming out this year, not even just Drake May and Caleb Williams. Like, it goes deeper than that with the quarterbacks that they like. So maybe we're just going through one of those odd periods. I also wonder, as we've seen the defensive meta change, I wonder if playing quarterback was just easier in the kind of single high meta that we lived in. And now because it's I guess maybe more difficult to get some of those deeper plays that we're seeing the quarterbacks having to be more consistent, make better plays. I'm not sure. I think there might be a lot of things working here, but I mean, if your quarterback is Desmond Ridder, like, and you have a chance to make the playoffs and you're the Falcons. Yeah. Like, I get it, because that's going to be your best chance to win. And so it's going to be interesting. Maybe an influx of quarterbacks helps us and we get back to where we were. I'm not really sure, but it really has been fascinating to watch this transition over the last, you know, two or three seasons to a less fun version of the NFL. If you're a fan and just want to see touchdowns.
Yeah. And just even, well, you know what, we've got a lot of other things to cover. I'm going to let that one go. We'll go to our third prop, which is Jahmyr Gibbs, the over on the longest rush at 16.5.
So every time Ryan writes about longest rush, and he has a ton of success with longest rush, he always harps on how many yards is the offensive line creating? Because if the offensive line is able to create 3 yards before contact, the chances of a 15 plus yard run increases dramatically. And according to True Media, from Ryan, running backs pick up at least 3 yards before contact on 26% of their carries against the Saints, which is the fifth worst rate for the defense. And when Gibbs gets at least 3 yards on touch, he converts it into a gain of 15 or more yards on 24% of his carries, in which he gets those 3 yards on touch. The other thing I would add to that is this could be a game in which the Lions are able to, you know, kind of sit on the ball in the second half. There's a lot of injury concerns in the Saints passing game. The offense already, you know, it can't score in the red zone, and it was already having issues even without these wide receiver concerns. So this could be a game where the Lions are just sitting on the ball in the second half. And when they're leading in the second half, they run the football. They have a 41.9% drop back rate in the second half when leading. And so that gives even more opportunities. So I think there are a lot of reasons why you would want to take the over on this longest rush prop.
Yeah, I think, and I'm sure it's a few yards less, I think you could double up probably in that case with David Montgomery as well.
Yeah, and I think that is, we're not going to, you know, this would be later for the DFS talk, but I think, is David Montgomery going to go more underlooked in this situation too? Because everything that you said for Gibbs works for Montgomery as well. And so I think both of them are in a really good spot here.
Yeah, I almost put Montgomery into my notes, but you can only throw in so many names for a 45, 50-minute show, and it's so early in the week. Now, no ownership on Montgomery. Gibbs right now, 12% ownership. Based on what you said, Ray, I think I might be over on both Detroit running backs this week. So kind of confluencing our two sections here, but I think it makes sense to do so. Is confluencing a word, O teacher of mine?
I don't know if you can make that a verb. We'll call it good. I liked it. That was a good, what do we call that? Verbanization. That I'm making up words as well.
It seemed real enough for corporate work. All right, let's move to the next prop. And it is a really interesting one. Tutu Atwell under 2.5 catches. I really like this.
It's an interesting one. When I read it, I was like, well, that's digging deep. That's but it makes sense. Yeah, it was random. But it does make sense when you go through kind of the rationale. And I think the most interesting thing that Ryan brings up about this in the article is that against man coverage, Tutu Atwell is not seeing as many targets. When we go back to week 5, Cooper Kupp and Puka Nacua have combined to have 68.9% of the Rams' targets versus man coverage, where that's only 49.6% against zone coverage. And then when Atwell is against man, he is being used more down the field, which those are the types of targets that you're going to catch less of. Your expected completion rate on those downfield targets is going to be lower. And so this particular matchup, I think, really, you know, Atwell going under, you know, 3 catches, that has been something that's happened a lot since Kupp has been back. But even this particular matchup points even more to us seeing less, you know, Tutu Atwell than even we had been seeing.
Yeah, I really like it because the Cleveland defense is no joke. We have seen some really good players beat them over the last few weeks, but Tutu Atwell ain't that. So I like that one, and that is we've got one more, and I can't say I love it, but Jordan loves it, and it is I had to get one dad pun in. Jordan Love over completions, 21.5. You knew the pun was coming. I wouldn't let you down.
Yeah, we played this actually on Thanksgiving to success in that game against Detroit. And I think this is based on a change that has happened in the Packers offense in which they are getting him to throw more around the line of scrimmage. So in the first 4 games, 41% of Jordan Love's attempts were 10 or more yards downfield. But that rate has dropped to 32% since week 5. His completion rate has increased. And so that's why you play completions, is because his completion rate's gone up. It's higher than maybe it looks like from a season average. And he's going up against a Chiefs team that you know, plays too high a lot and could allow more of those kind of shorter passes that they've been targeting. He has a 68% completion rate versus too high coverage since week 5, Jordan Love does. And so there's a lot of kind of signal here. You would hope that the Kansas City offense that we saw in the second, third, and fourth quarter against the Raiders, we would hope that offense shows up. And if that's the case, also the Chiefs could kind of push this. But I have less faith in that aspect of this prop based on kind of what we've seen from the Chiefs this season. But even so, Love, just based on kind of the changing usage, Love could still hit this over.
Yeah, it's wild that when you put your players in the spots that are best for them, they succeed. And credit to the Green Bay staff for changing on the fly and not just insisting on what wasn't working. So that is going to do it for the props. As a reminder of what we've covered, Deontay Johnson over longest reception, 22.5 yards. Exact same for Deontay Johnson and DeAndre Hopkins. For some reason, they sounded similar. Both over 22.5 reception. Jahmyr Gibbs over longest rush of 16.5 or lower. Tutu Atwell under 2.5 catches. And Jordan Love over completions, 21.5. Hopefully, we will have Ryan back next week to discuss this. Although, Ray, it might be interesting to do a 3-man booth once down the stretch. You are always welcome to join us when Ryan is here as well, and I could just talk less. And as a reminder of things that are very positive, like me talking less, I want to remind you that you can get access to all our fantasy content, including insights, props, worksheets, and more, by taking advantage of our fantasy packages available on the Sharp Football website. Right now, we're running a special offer for listeners. Use the code ANGLES for 15% off any fantasy package. The 15% discount also extends to, as mentioned, every package on site. Check it out in the podcast description or use the code ANGLES during the checkout on the purchase page of the Sharp Football website. All right, Ray, time to transition over to DFS. As mentioned, we're going to do it a little differently this week. But before we get into the plays and the questions, I do want to mention the bye weeks. We've got a lot of really good fantasy players on bye. The Ravens, the Bills, the Bears, the Raiders, the Vikings, and the Giants. Well, so much for good offenses with the Giants.
We don't have Saquon. I mean, give Saquon some credit here. He's doing his best.
He is.
Penn State legend.
And the fact that they didn't trade him and get whatever they could for him was kind of egregious. But I guess if they keep him and he leaves after the year, I think they get a third-round pick. So I don't know that they could have gotten more. All right, so my first question on Daily Fantasy this week on DraftKings is the most important one. We get Zach Moss with Jonathan Taylor out at 4,600, and his projected large field ownership right now is looking like it's going to be between 50 and 60%. We don't both get deals like this very often anymore, Ray, and we also don't see ownership like this very often. So I want to get your thoughts on your initial thoughts on whether if you were doing 150 lineups, if you would be under, even, or over on Zach Moss.
I feel like I would be around even. Rich and I actually talked about this morning on the earlier podcast. And yeah, if I'm max entering, I'm going to be pretty even on him. But if you're playing, you know, if you're playing just a couple lineups like a regular Joe, I feel like you're at the point here where you just have to play Moss because of the way that this slate is structured and what Moss allows you to do, allows you to go and get those super great projected players and Christian McCaffrey or Tyreek Hill, or maybe both if you really want to get wild with a lineup. So that is, you know, that I think kind of leads me to, you know, I think what we're seeing, the roster we see with Moss makes a lot of sense. And if you're just playing one or two lineups, then I kind of think you have to use him. I am interested, however, I think that even more than just having Moss, I think that that pairing of Moss and Tyreek Hill or Moss and Christian McCaffrey, I think that's going to be a ton of lineups as well. And so if you wanted to make a lineup that was like Moss, and then you double stack Jalen Hurts with AJ Brown and Devonta Smith, and then you have Brandon Ayuk in that, or you have George Kittle in that as well, then that could be a way to get there, take advantage of some of that price savings that you have. You're going to have to get cheap elsewhere. Like, you might have to play Tyler Allgeier or, you know, A.T. Perry or Jonathan Mingo, you know, if he's healthy, like those kinds of names. But there are avenues to using Moss in a unique way that you can kind of get away from this Hill and CMC thing. But you know what? Tyreek Hill is probably going to smash this week. So maybe you just eat the chalk on two spots and just hope for the best on the rest of it.
Yeah. I mean, my initial thought is that this is as close to a lock button, but injuries are a real thing, Ray. And, you know, if he gets injured in the first quarter and you have 100 or 90%, you know, you're going to have a really long day. And it really, to me, isn't worth it to do it if you're only going to gain 20 to 25% on the field. To me, at that point, the risk of having 90% Moss, I don't know if it's worth the value of going over. Now, if as we go on a little bit and more value opens up, another running back sits that we didn't expect, and all of a sudden he's at 40%. Well, yeah, I might go 80 or 90% Zach Moss. Your thoughts?
Yeah, I was trying to think of what that would be. Unfortunately, you know, Dearness Johnson, the Jaguars are playing on Monday night, and we don't know what Travis Etienne's status is going to be. So that might be one that could open up. I do think there are other options, other cheap options as well. We can talk about a few of them later. So maybe there are some pivots there. But yeah, unless we see that start to shift a little bit, I'm just probably going to be with the field on that one and just try to be unique in my eight other spots and, you know, hope for the best.
Yeah. And you mentioned both McCaffrey and Tyreek. So that was my next question. Because we have such great value on Moss and because CMC and Tyreek Hill are popping really well in projections, you know, we've got Hill at 25% ownership at 9,600, CMC 20% at 9K. So my thought there, Ray, is if, like you said, if I'm going to do that, I'm going to maybe put in something else. The real easy one for me is maybe put in Brock Purdy, right? And now I'm going ahead to kind of the quarterback section. I'm thinking of going 50% of my Brock Purdy lineups having CMC. He catches touchdowns as well as he runs them in. You add another Ayuk or now you've got three Niners along with Moss and you have a bring back from the other team. Now your ownership is gotten down to a reasonable rate. I can't think off the top of my head with Tyreek, but the other guy who's up around 9K that I think is a very good play if he's healthy, and we don't know if he's going to be healthy, is Keenan Allen.
Yeah, the thing about Keenan Allen, and he's going to get a ton of targets. I mean, this guy has made catching 12 passes a normal thing to do, which is kind of wild. That's where we are with him. But you're also kind of a little bit relying on this Patriots offense to push them, right? And that, I don't know, if you're really looking for a ceiling output game from Keenan Allen, then you're going to need Bailey Zappe to play well. And that's a tough bet to make, I think, on that one.
Yeah, I think Bailey Zappe showed why they stuck with Mac Jones as long as they did. And, I actually felt bad for Mac Jones crying after, you know, when he was being interviewed, his lips were like shaking.
Well, like, I know this isn't the place to talk about this, but to continually bench Mac Jones the way they've done is absurd. Like, that is the worst possible way to handle this situation, to continue to bench him. Like, they've benched him now four times this year. Is that right? In game? Like, what do you expect a quarterback to have any confidence after that? It just,
when you know the guy behind him isn't any good either.
Yeah. Right? But maybe just, I don't know, throw Malik Cunningham out there and try to run an interesting offense and try to get a top two pick and see where you can go from there. That's the only place they are now.
I have to believe that Bill Belichick 10 years ago would have done that. That he was so sharp back then. And I don't know, you know, he's like that fastball pitcher who was throwing 95 most of his career. And he was still pretty good when he was bringing it at 92, 93. But now his fastball's at 88. And he's just getting clobbered, and it's sad to see. All right, so let's move over to the quarterbacks. I mentioned Brock Purdy. He and Russell Wilson are both looking about 15% ownership at 6,100 and 5,700. I talked about my CMC, you know, a lot of a way to be different. Purdy at 15%, CMC at 20%. And Moss at 55, you know, playing them together is a way to kind of minimize that. But, you know, I know there's not a lot of good options this week, but boy, Russell Wilson at 15%, he has not shown any kind of ceiling so far.
Yeah. First of all, on Purdy, I'm all in on Purdy this week. You have a game environment that possibly could push him. And I don't think we're treating this game, at least it seems like when I'm looking at the early kind of roster projections, it doesn't seem like we're treating this game like it could be the shootout that it actually could be. And maybe that's because the 49ers defense has played better as of late. Maybe that's because, you know, of the pricing of all of the kind of top players, since it's such the both offenses, you know, have their guys and that's what who they play. So it's, you know, it's interesting this game. So yeah, I'm all in on Purdy. For Russ, I think the question is, can the Texans get them out of what they've been doing? And are the Texans going to go out and try to take the game to the Broncos, score early, score several touchdowns early, and make the Broncos play their game? Because if they don't, or if they can't, because this Broncos pass defense has been pretty good as of late, then this gets into a rock fight. And if this is a rock fight, then you're not going to get the big scores you need, the ceiling scores you need out of these guys. And so that is my main concern. I do think, you know, Russ could have some success if he's going to actually be forced to throw, but this really feels like an under game to me. And I think we're going to be disappointed by the offensive output here based on, I mean, the Broncos were able to do this against the Chiefs and the Bills too, just drag them into the mud and wrestle them in the mud. They've been able to do it for five games in a row now. I think we might be seeing that again this week. And that's a concern for both he and CJ Stroud's ceiling.
Yeah. And CJ Stroud, now he is priced up with the top guys. Speaking of the top guys, Jalen Hurts or Tua and Stroud, none of them project very well in projections, but last week we saw what Hurts can do when he's pushed. So I really like the comment that you made. Right now, they've got a team total of 21 points. I mean, I could easily see a scenario where they go over. But as you also mentioned, the issue is, and last week, we had some cheap Bills that you could play. You know, Gabe Davis, Shakir, Kincaid. There's really nobody on either of these teams that seems like they could give you a tournament-winning score that is under $6,000.
So yeah, I mean, Devontae Smith is now priced up to $7,300. He's actually $100 more than Brandon Ayuk now. And so yeah, it's tough to build those lineups. But also, since it's
Debo's the one guy at 62. I mean, and Kittle's 62, but there's such an opportunity cost with a $6,200 tight end, where other than Moss, seems like a pretty tight week. Speaking of salary savings, any interest in the ancient Joe Flacco at 4,600?
So I Joe Flacco to me is the kind of DFS quarterback, because of pricing, that looks good on like a point per dollar value, but then just doesn't. He's not going to give you like the raw score that you need to actually do anything. And so, yeah, I'm out on it. And if I'm wrong about it, if he throws four touchdowns to David Njoku and Elijah Moore, you know, so be it. I'm fine to lose that way, because I can't see the raw score being there for him, no matter what his price is.
Yeah. And when you look at him at 4,600 versus Kenny Pickett at 5,100, you talked earlier about the Steelers. I mean, I don't like playing Kenny Pickett in DFS, but, you know, right now he's showing 7.5% ownership, which I don't like either, because typically a guy who's not that good, I want sub 5% ownership so I can put 15% of my lineups on a guy like that and be three times the field. So that's tough. You know, Will Levis, I mentioned earlier, right now he's showing almost no ownership. Indianapolis has, as you mentioned, been very giving. So Will Levis, I think, might become more and more interesting to me. And I'm really curious, Ray, to see, as we start hearing some of the sites that move the needle on ownership, who guys are on and who guys are off, because really, to me, there's nobody who is so good that I want to play this week. So to me, it then becomes, if, you know, Russ is going to be 15%, and let's say someone like Sam Howell gets pushed up to 15%, who's going to be that guy in the 3-4% range? You know, who are a couple of those guys? Your thoughts on that? And do you have any names at quarterback before we move on?
Not really. I mean, you mentioned it, it's not the best. We didn't talk about Tua. I mean, Tua is in as good a spot as possible for a fantasy quarterback against a team that likes to throw and has had some offensive success on their own. And so could the Commanders keep up and push? I don't know. You know, the price is high, and I get that, but the price to stack him with the only two receivers he throws to, Tyreek and Jalen Waddle. Tyreek has a 32.6% target share over the last 5 weeks. Jalen Waddle has 24.1%, so we're at 56% of every target goes to those two guys. It's tough. It's tough, again, just like with Jalen Hurts, but the upside with that pairing is massive. And if you're getting that saving for Moss, and people are going to be people are going to have a lot of CMC with Moss, then I don't know. It's interesting, at least to me.
Yeah, my issue with Tua is that typically they run in as many as they pass in. But I think back to the point is everyone on a week where everyone is flawed, the Miami offense could be the answer. We're running a little bit behind. Let's talk about. We've talked about Moss and CMC. The other, just real quickly, the other chalky guys, Rashad White, Javonte Williams, Ramondre, and Breece Hall. Give me, are there any that you like, and is there one that you just like, nope?
Yeah, I can't get behind Breece Hall because of the offense. They don't score points, the matchup is bad, and the offensive line is bad. But other than that, you know,
I'm
excited about Breece Hall. You're relying on a big play or him catching a lot of passes, which, to be fair, he has done the last couple weeks, but he hasn't even been doing a lot with that. So I have a very hard time getting behind Breece Hall here.
Yep, I agree. None of those guys, to me, I would, and that might be something that pushes me to 100% Moss, that the leverage is I'm not playing some of these other chalkier guys that I don't like very much. But again, we'll study more as we go along. Two names I'll throw out that I liked in looking at it. One is I think Alvin Kamara is a fabulous pivot off of Christian McCaffrey this week. He's not going to rate as well. He's $1,000 cheaper. All three of the Saints wide receivers might miss. And where we're seeing ownership is on Juwan Johnson I think this could be a 7 to 10 catch Alvin Kamara week. And, you know, that gives you the floor. And we also know he has a ceiling. And the other guy, Jerome Ford, every week seems to come in at like 5 or 6% ownership. And I know he's splitting work with Kareem Hunt, but he's cheap enough. Those are my two names, Ray. Who do you have that you like that's inexpensive, not inexpensive, low-owned at running back right now?
I mean, I brought him up earlier. I think Devin Singletary is in a really good spot. We know they can't run against good run defenses, but they can against bad ones. And even though the Denver pass defense has improved, the run defense still hasn't been great. And like I said, this could turn into a rock fight. This could be a good situation for Singletary. Maybe, you know, I don't know, is Pierce going to start to get more work as we move away from that injury? I'm not sure. But I am interested here in Singletary. And then I was under, like, when I went into this slate, I was under the assumption that the Steelers running backs would be, like, super, super popular. And the early projections I'm seeing is that's not the case. We'll see kind of as we get closer to it. But, I mean, Najee Harris is getting work. This is a outstanding matchup for him. He is less, you know, he is less kind of sexy than Jalen Warren. Is this a Najee Harris week? I throw that to you.
I need to go throw up, but it might be. I almost won the min max last week. I came in 12th, my first good DFS in quite a while, and Najee was on that team. And Freiermuth wasn't. And if Freiermuth was on that team and I had pretty much any other running back, I'd be sitting here like Scrooge McDuck this week, you know, just tossing money. But it didn't happen. All right. So then again, I also want to throw back the name of Jahmyr Gibbs and David Montgomery. I think Jahmyr Gibbs, if, you know, he's right in the range of a lot of those chalky guys that we mentioned for half the ownership. I think that was a great call for you. Over at wide receiver, if all three Saints are going to miss, A.T. Perry isn't showing ownership now, but I know he's kind of a boutique wide receiver in the DFS industry. I wouldn't be surprised if he gets steam. But if he's under 10% at 3,300, I will have a good bit of A.T. Perry. I did like his tape. Josh Downs at 5,100 is interesting to me. And we talked about it, so I won't go into detail, but last week, Pat Freiermuth just got all the targets. George Pickens at 4,800 is right at that same price point as Moss. I think he might be one of my favorite DFS plays on the week. And let's see, who else did I have there? Higher up, I'm going to throw out Mike Evans. If you're looking for a pivot off of Tyreek Hill, it's a pretty good matchup. Mike Evans has just been a stud, and I don't think people are going to want to play him at 7,700, Ray. Your thoughts on those guys, and who do you have for us?
Yeah, I mean, I don't disagree with really any of them. You know, with Evans, just again, game environment. You worry about game environment. Will the Panthers offense, though, will it actually be good now that they, you know, they fired their coach? We'll know. We'll have to see how that works out. Nobody is really sticking out to me this week. It is a very odd slate. You know, we've talked about Tyreek Hill is Tyreek Hill in that matchup. You know what you're getting out of him, but there hasn't been a ton sticking at me. I keep going back to the San Francisco Philly game. I think I'm going to build a lot around that, which means I'll have Ayuk and I'll have Debo and Devonta Smith and, you know, even AJ Brown. He's coming off a kind of a rough go, but I think that he's in a really good spot here as well. So I'm going to be in that kind of range a lot, I think, with my wide receivers. And then if you're going to go down low, I mean, yeah, A.T. Perry makes sense. Mingo, if he's healthy, makes sense. There are people down there that you can go cheap with.
Yeah, there was a wide receiver who was a dog, and Mingo was his name-o. all right, I'm going to move over to tight end. After 2 weeks of some massively owned guys, tight end is more normal. The three guys right around 20%, David Njoku, Juwan Johnson, and Trey McBride. McBride's up to 4,900. We got news that Zach Ertz is not coming back. But I think McBride was dinged. I think one of the big things is like A.J. Brown's dinged up. Devonta, you know, I'm really going to be keeping my eye on which guys we have to wait to the last minute to find out they're a go, because I feel comfortable fading those guys. But some of the other dinged up guys who if you hear on Friday night they're going, I kind of like. Ray, what are your thoughts on the tight ends that you like this week?
Can I pass? Is that a?
I think every week this year, pretty much, other than early Trey McBride weeks, I'll throw out a couple names then.
Juwan Johnson. Just real quick on Juwan Johnson, I am interested to see. You know, I've looked at a few sites, and I see differing roster projections for Juwan Johnson. If he is going to be popular, and he should be, because he run a ton of routes last week with the wide receivers out. The wide receiver is going to be out again. We know he has the scoring upside. We saw it last year, and so it makes sense. That is a play that makes a lot of sense. And so I'm interested just more to see how popular he's going to be versus his price and kind of where else you can go at tight end.
Yeah, I'm going to throw out Kittle. He has very low ownership, and you go Purdy, Kittle, McCaffrey, one bring back from Philly, and then you're going to really have to dumpster dive for some other positions, but maybe in two tight end sets where, you know, you kind of use Kittle as a flex. I think he's interesting at low ownership. We haven't seen him really go off when both Debo and Ayuk are there, but that doesn't mean it can't happen. And on a week where you don't like anything, you know, I always like betting on the talented players who are a little less likely. Like, this isn't their week. That's why their ownership is lower. And I'm going to throw out another. Freiermuth is up to 4,300. He's not getting ownership. Again, it could just be a one-week thing that he got all those targets, but what if it isn't? At 4,300, if he stays sub 10%, he would be on my radar. And the last name, which would be great leverage, would be Taysom Hill instead of Juwan Johnson. Yeah. We've seen how many times where when when the Saints are struggling to do anything, it's like, let's throw Taysom out there and see what he can do. He can catch passes. He's shown that a little bit this year, and we know he can run in touchdowns. I'm going to throw out Taysom Hill, even though he's a little expensive. Ray, thoughts?
I think your idea of double tight end this week on the main slate, where there's like, I don't like any of them except for Kittle. And the problem with Kittle is he costs so much that that's going to take you out of some better projected players. And so maybe that's a really interesting idea to just go double tight end. And that might make you unique enough that, you know, that's fine. And you can play, you know, Moss and McCaffrey, like you said, and it'll be fine. But yeah, there's not a ton I like here with tight ends, but I suppose that's just the story of 2023, is that there aren't a ton of tight ends that we're very interested in right now.
Yeah, I think Gerald Everett at 1.5% with so many injured Chargers is an ownership play. And I'm sorry, go ahead.
Well, I mean, we saw that last year with him and the number of targets he was getting whenever they were having, you know, all of the injury concerns. It doesn't sound like, you know, it doesn't sound like Palmer's going to be back this week. And it seems like they're out on Quentin Johnston already, which that's wild. So, I mean, it makes sense. It certainly makes sense, but what is he going to get you? If Gerald Everett gets a touchdown and 6 catches, is that going to be 18 points because he's going to get 7 yards? Like, it's just, it's hard to really make a strong argument for anybody, but yeah, like I agree. It makes sense. That play makes sense.
Yeah. I mean, again, the double tight end is an idea. It's not like Ray and I are saying this is the way to attack this slate. I typically, in the optimizer, the optimizer I use now only allows you to pick what percentage you're willing to have each of the three positions, running back, wide receiver, and tight end. And I typically only allow about 15 to 20% of my lineups to have two tight ends. And I'll also make a rule where any tight end that I don't want to be in a two tight end lineup, all the bad ones, I make a rule maximum one of those guys. So if I'm getting a Laporta and a McBride or a Kittle and a Laporta, I'm okay with it. But I really don't want, you know, Gerald Everett and Durham Smythe on the same team. So
Gerald Everett and Kate Otten.
Yeah. And Kate Otten right now is showing 12% ownership. So, you know, that's a hard
live your
pass
dreams.
For me. Well,
live
Ray,
your dreams, kids.
It was a great pleasure again working with you. I want to thank you for stepping in for Ryan. That is going to do it for us. I also want to thank Sam Halderman, who was nice enough to make a nice comment in the chat about enjoying the product that we put out there. We enjoy having you enjoy our product. And hopefully next week, Ryan will be back. And that will do it for this week. Ray, I will talk to you soon.